When's the last time we saw each other?
Well, it might have been at the Montreal Comedy Festival, maybe.
How many years is that? That's a horrible sound that you just
made. It's like, I was just about to say comedians go by what comedy special I saw you last. I don't think you had any comedy specials on YouTube, and now you have two on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So it was before those. So how long ago was your first comedy special?
2010 or something?
That's how long ago?
Yeah, it takes me years to write, yeah.
But that, 13 years ago? Right, could that be 13 years since we've seen each other?
Put that on the... That's in the shop. Put it down there.
Put this down here.
Yeah, and then we're going to start. I'm just going to hold on a second. Let me make sure the mic is on. All right. Episode 79, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? My guest today, Joe Matarese.
He said it right. Good job.
We're trying to figure out the last time we saw each other.
I think it might be the Montreal Comedy Festival. I remember going up there.
But which one? You think it's like 2010 or something? Or
I did it like four times, and it was probably 12 to 15 years ago. Wow. Could it be that long? Because look the same to me as the last. No, I'm all grayed. You're not.
No, but you're still in shape. Like a lot of people, you know, like you got married. Do you have kids?
I have kids.
Yeah. So you're looking great. You must neglect them a lot.
I don't, believe it or not. Yeah.
Good for you.
I have the like what you're doing on this podcast, What's Wrong with Orny Adams, to me is the opposite of me.
Okay.
Which is, I think I have my life and my kids part down, but the career stuff took a hit because I have the wife and the kids and the house and all this stuff that I've heard you say in subliminal moments in your career. Like when you went, you know,
did
you
notice? I'll tell you, I'll look right into the camera. A wife and kids, a relationship. All get in the way of the progress of a career, without a doubt.
But that's something you want, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we'll get to that?
Well, we'll get to that. Let me start this episode, for crying out loud. Episode 79. I've got Joe here. Are you on the road a lot? Can you be on the road a lot?
When people look at my schedule, it gets ripped on because I don't do the road a lot. I've kind of mastered the Northeast area. So, when I'm on the road... The most I'm ever out of town is like one or two days. The most.
Well, here's my thing, because I like to, you know, I like to start with a what's wrong.
Okay.
Now, I'll say this. For someone that's on the road, I've been constantly for decades now. I eat more meals alone. And it's depressing.
Right.
Like you just look around and you see all these people and you're the only one. And they all, every time I go in, the hostess always tries to seat me at the bar. You want to sit at the bar? I'm like, no, I don't want to sit at the, I want to sit at a table. And they look around. Now it's a big issue because one person's going to take up a two top or a four top. And they're always trying to talk me into the bar. I hate the bar. I hate the seats at the bar. And I hate the fact that I'm sitting there watching the bartender make drinks the whole time for the people in the restaurant that have friends.
Well, if this makes you feel better, when you're married and you have kids and you are alone and you do get to sit at the bar and eat dinner, that's heaven for us.
So that's heaven. So
we love it. That's why they're saying that to you. I love sitting at the bar alone. Like this week, I'm in LA for 4 days alone.
But you have the wife and kids. I have nothing. Yes. So all it reminds me is while they're sitting there with a shaker, I'm going, who's this drink for? And then I watch the tray of four drinks go to the people enjoying their lives. And I'm miserable on the road in like Poughkeepsie or wherever the hell they put me that weekend. And I can't take it. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. You want my life. You want my life.
I didn't say I want your life.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I used to.
You used to. Not anymore?
No, I have learned as I've evolved to become...
I hate that word, evolve.
Something about being in my 50s made me realize, oh, this is better than you realize. You have a not just a wife, like a wife who has a very good income, who's a sweetheart, who's very pretty. Like, she's pretty much...
But you've had all sorts of problems. You talk about it. You've been in therapy. You've been marital
I still
therapy.
Am in therapy.
You had a podcast called Fixing Joe. I mean, when I hear you've evolved, to me that says, you've given up. You've given up. See? Biologically, we're supposed to evolve a little bit, but you've lost your fight. I mean, I've heard... I heard you even bought a comedy club.
I didn't buy a comedy club. People thought I bought a comedy club because it looked like... Are we supposed to have like intro music playing under us right now? That's supposed to be there.
This is very fancy.
Does that stay there the whole episode?
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, if you watch documentaries, there's not a single second of dialogue that doesn't have like some sort of music underneath you to manipulate you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very distracting.
Go ahead, Joe. Tell us all about this. Tell us all about this.
I love it.
This comedy club that people think you own, but you really don't own.
No, I did not own the club. But it was my comedy club. It had its own entrance. It was its own entity in this restaurant 10 minutes away from my house.
Like bananas. You just lease umbrellas.
It's gone. I don't have it anymore.
What happened?
I realized I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was too small for the headache of what a comedy club is.
Right.
Because I thought... Oh, let's give this a try. Maybe it'll be fun, you know, and a place that I could get to see comedians that I knew again, you know, but it was only 50 seats. It was tiny. 50 seats with no tables.
What are we charging for tickets? I don't even like the economics already. I'm taking my headsets off. I don't like the economics.
I had some we'd have some occasional big names so we could charge more for tickets.
Right.
You know, like Mark Norman did it. You know, he sold when we had him there.
Sold out 50 seats?
No, he did it outside.
Yeah.
We had an outdoor space that could seat 125.
But isn't that the end of the line when you start opening comedy clubs? That means you're no longer. Yeah.
You don't realize it till you start and you're like, oh, I can't do comedy. Right. So I got to stop doing this.
Are you okay?
The only way to own a comedy club and be normal is the way Joe Rogan is doing it, which is like be a multimillionaire and have somebody do the whole thing and just put your name on the building.
Right.
But if you got to like be hands-on, you're not doing comedy anymore.
Right.
Or
and
you're not
and he's opening like an A room out of the gate. Like that's, you know, and you're right. He can continue to have his career as a podcaster and a comedian and run that club and have that club run by other people. You're absolutely right.
Well, that's the other thing I realized really fast is there was other people financially involved in the business. So I wasn't allowed to do any of the cool stuff that you'd want to do. Like you're here doing your own podcast. You have your own setup. Could you imagine if you were doing this with somebody else who was financially involved and they were telling you that camera's not the kind you need.
Right.
You need to edit it this way. Not the way you're doing it.
Right.
Like that's what happens when you're involved with somebody else.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had this happen a few times.
Sure everything's recording because I didn't hit the backup. I had to I've
done
myself.
That before.
That's already talked. Yeah.
I told you how.
Yeah. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
I told you that when but
you've done everything.
But you have the positive because you're doing the whole thing yourself.
Yes.
It's yours, and you can make it exactly if you're. I have a feeling you're like me, where we're very OCD and we like things a specific way, right? If you're that way, like, dude, this comedy club looked really cool.
First of all, I haven't evolved, so we're not alike at all.
Okay.
We're just, I'm still, I got
no,
the
but
fight.
I can tell you're picky and you like things to look a certain way. Listen, I can tell in 2 seconds.
In our careers, we have seen it go from, if you wanted to do something like this, you had to hook up with a network, you had to hook up with investors. Like, you couldn't do this. We didn't have the technology. Now you can reach people, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
Definitely. Definitely.
Before we get into all this stuff, which I think is unbelievable. First of all, Joe Matarese is a stand-up comedian. I met you in New York City. I don't remember the first time we met, but I always liked you. You were always cool. So when you contacted me last week, you said, I'm coming to LA. Can I do your podcast? I was like, great. First of all, it's a dream that somebody reaches out to me. I don't have to beg a guest to come on. This is fantastic. And I'd have to think about it more than once. Like, I don't think I've ever had a moment where I didn't like you. You're a nice guy. You're a funny guy.
And I'm amazed because I was thinking this yesterday as a, you know, you got a 6-hour flight coming to New York. You got a lot of time to think. I'm like, it's funny that I'm doing Orny's podcast because you used to be the guy that we ripped on in all those short films. And I remember...
What short films?
Do you remember when we used to make short films for the Comic Strip Christmas Party in New York City?
Yeah. This sounds from... Yes.
And
right.
For people listening, it was like the biggest Christmas party in all the comedy clubs back then.
Right.
There'd be 350 people... managers, agents, that's when they used to come to everything, You know, now they just go to YouTube and look at things. Right. But then they were there.
Joe's saying they used to go to comedy clubs, agents, managers, representation, networks, buyers, to see the comedians.
And if there was a party, like a Christmas party, they would go to mingle and
I don't
bullshit
remember.
Their way into representing these comedians.
Yeah.
So this guy who owned the club or booked the club, this guy Lucian Hold, who passed away, decided that they were going to show short films every year, and they were always inside jokes.
Right.
And usually they were parodies of other movies and TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I think when they finally stopped is when they got so... Now, as we're seeing, you know, this is high quality. Podcasts are evolving.
Yeah, what were
back,
we shooting it
back
on?
Then, you were shooting it on a VHS, and you were taking like two VHS recorders and trying to do that kind of editing. There was no computers, nothing. And we would stay up. I remember this. I became friends with this guy, and we shot these videos on all his equipment. We'd edit for 24 straight hours the day before the Christmas party.
That sounds because beautiful.
And then you'd try to have your short film.
You can't do that with a wife and kids.
Yeah, you could. You couldn't.
And you'd have these short films. So wait a minute. There were short films.
Short films that were parodies.
Me?
And you were in. Here's the scenario, if you don't remember this.
No.
We did one called Funny Fellas that was a parody of Goodfellas.
Right.
And the opening scene was the same scene as in Goodfellas, where he's in the trunk of the car as they're driving, and you hear like boom, boom, and they pull over and they realize he's still alive.
Right.
So we're driving and we hear boom, 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 and we pull over and we open the trunk, and there is a Jim McHugh was playing you.
Oh my God.
And he's 6'10", which is, and
doesn't make sense.
He's in the trunk of our car, and we open the fucking trunk, and he's going, yeah. When am I getting a deal? When is that? I crushed. That used to be your word.
Right. Godfrey did that impersonation of me last week on the podcast. Yeah. I crushed.
And we were like, then we start killing you.
It's the name of my production company, by the way. I Crush Productions.
It's perfect. So we start killing you, and then the Goodfellas voiceover starts. But I always wanted to be a comedian instead of a gangster, right? And
where is that? Can I see that now?
That's somewhere. Yeah, I have it on.
Who
like
has
a,
it? You?
I have it at my
but
house.
Why are
somewhere.
People? Why was I the target? In my head, I go, wow, I was a target because. I don't know. I was a threat or I was...
There was a couple guys that were targets back then.
Was it because I was so outspoken? Was it...
Yes.
I was such a big personality?
Yeah. I feel like you crossed a threshold at some point because you said you didn't. You don't think you've evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree.
Right.
Because you used to be loud and annoying and now you're loud and more self-deprecating. Like you shit on yourself. Back then, it was I crushed... And it wasn't like, but I suck and I'm depressed and I want a wife. It was like, I'm great. Like, and there was no, I always say a test of a comedian not being funny is when he thinks he's very good at it.
But like, you think I was funny? And I thought I was funny. I thought it was funny.
But you crossed a threshold where it got way funnier when you started making fun of yourself.
Right. And when did that happen?
I think. Not to bring up the Seinfeld documentary. Soon after that, you transformed because it was like a mirror back in your face. Mm. And then you, every time I saw you after that, I was like, oh, I really like Orny. Because the other target was Eddie Ift. He used to get shit on a lot in the New York scene.
Huh.
And everyone shit on him because they thought he came from rich parents.
Ah.
Like, I have a comedian friend. I won't say his name. But he worked for... Facebook and Yahoo when they were startup companies. So he's a multimillionaire because he owns stock in both companies because he was there at the beginning,
so
right? And then he started doing stand-up. And I used to tell him, you saying you're a millionaire on stage makes comedians hate you. I go, they would like you more if you were HIV positive. That's what I used to say to him. They don't like success.
Wrong. Yeah. I not liked in the New York scene?
At the beginning, you were acting successful when it's like the comedian that has the really good website that just started. You know those guys? You're like, dude, get good at comedy first. You were saying you were great before you were there. You were early on the great.
Was nobody else saying I was great? Was I the only one saying
yes,
I was great?
Yes.
Okay, but you didn't think I was great?
We thought you were I still think this way about New York City comedy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us were on the very same level.
Uh-huh.
There was a couple guys, and I don't see if you agree, that I said stood out.
Yeah.
And to me, there's really only one, when I think of it, who I went, this guy's better than us.
Who's that?
Dave Chappelle.
Chappelle.
When I first saw Chappelle, I went, this guy's,
but he was already,
this guy's a star. But he wasn't a star when he first came to New York City.
I think he was. I lived in the same building as him. And I think he had already been in movies.
Well, you came to New York after me. Yeah. When I got there, I remember him first showing up and just getting like those little like 6 minute stand up shows on like MTV or something. And him being like 19, 20 years old. And even then I went, that's a star. I could tell there's something that's to another level right there.
I see my time in New York a little differently than you. To defend myself, I saw myself as somebody that had a lot of success on stage. And I think I was announcing, like you said, I crushed. But it was sort of in the vein of like Muhammad Ali. Like it was part put on.
I don't think we were taken on. I don't think we realized it because it was so early in the game of knowing, now that I think about it. Because I wish I knew. It's like when you get older, what's the joke? You wish you could go refuck the girls you fucked and show them how good you got at it.
Someone's like a joke. Someone sounds great.
Someone has that bit.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think Attell might tell it.
Yeah.
Somebody tells that joke. And if you could go back, like you were separating yourself. You were a character, which is a good thing when you look at it. But that was before comedians had that very. They didn't have that entrepreneurial thing like they do now. Like, I got to get up a podcast. I got to be who I am. If you remember when we were coming up, it was how we were all trying to get sitcoms. That's what it was.
Or even just doing comedy because we felt we were funny. And like, I feel like comedy is really hard now because a lot of the people, you can look at comedy on YouTube, you can watch everybody, and you can figure out the formula. And you can get up there and pretty much be a comedian, like karaoke. Mm-hmm. And it gets harder and harder for original minds to sort of outpace that sort of template that's out there. I mean, look at all the commercials, all the sitcoms, everybody sounds the same topics, the same cadence, the same gestures. So you can easily, but I felt like at the time you and I were very different. There were a lot of people that were different. The people I came up with in Boston, like we were all doing it because we were funny. Like a lot of times I look at somebody on stage and I'm like, why are you on stage? Like, are you funny in real life? Like, are you making the checkout person at the grocery store laugh? Are you making people in elevators laugh?
Right.
Like, why are you here?
Right.
And where's your original thought? And where's your resolution? Like, we were doing it back when our parents didn't want us to do it. Right. Now, parents are like, yeah, go ahead. You know, go viral. Buy us some homes. But we were like, sort of like, my parents.
Rebels.
Yeah. And you're playing these shitholes, which I'm still playing.
Yeah.
I can't believe after all this time, I'm still playing some of these venues. It's shocking. And the people I have to deal with, the journey is unbelievable. So yes, you do evolve. And I can see how people would be turned off by me, but I felt like I was like the guy who would walk up to the plate and just knock it out of, you know, point to right field and then knock it out of the park.
Well, I wasn't turned off by you for some reason, but a lot of other people were. Here's another thing.
Haters. Comics are looking for a reason to hate. Listen,
but it changed. Nobody hates you anymore.
That's great. But when did it change? Is there an exact date?
Here's another thing that I still remember about the guy who was in the trunk playing you and getting stabbed.
Yeah, the Jimmy Q guy.
He had sunglasses on with a little blue tint. You used to wear these sunglasses on stage that had a little tint on.
No, I didn't. I never wore sunglasses off stage. Off stage. Maybe
you were wearing them around.
Yeah, and I had style. So now we're gonna hate me.
No,
I
didn't hate you. I had a friend that called them deal glasses. He goes, "We got to get some." He said it to me one day. He goes, "We got to get some orny deal glasses. Those are deal glasses." Like he liked them.
If you were
doing what you were doing then, now, and the age you were then, that probably would have worked really well.
Did you ever see me in Teen Wolf?
No.
It's the exact same character.
You're playing that.
The exact same. It's just arrogant. Just you say things that are so absurd.
Yeah.
You just go, how can he get away with this?
That's what I would cast you in every movie as.
That's what I like. And I like a little mystery. I like that I'm not well liked by everybody. I think that's fun. It's okay to be misunderstood.
As long as it's not fake, and it's not. I mean, there's a lot of truth in that, but there's a nice guy underneath it all, and that's fine too. Mm. And I think it works for you.
So I have evolved.
You have evolved. You don't realize it.
Wow. It's a slow evolution.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the ups and downs. You've got to tell us the America's Got Talent story.
What? All of it? What do you want to know about it?
I don't know. How quickly can you tell it? I just remember. And I did figure out the last time I saw you was at the Stress Factory. We worked together a few years ago. Maybe 10 years ago. I feel like it was a New Year's Eve or something. I feel like we worked together for some reason.
Maybe.
I remember seeing you because I was like, I wonder if he's going to do the same bits. Is he going to do the tennis?
Did I?
The tennis bit.
I hope not.
I don't know. I know you have a new special coming out. We'll get to that in a few minutes. And when does that come out so we can promote that?
Well, it was supposed to be out while I was out here in LA to promote, which sucks.
Of course.
And my PR person got me on the Adam Carolla show. So he's like, you got to go out there. Even like, I don't want to push the Adam Carolla podcast. That's what he said. I don't want to push it further ahead. I'm like, so I got to go out and promote the special that's not out yet.
Why can't the special be out when you're on the Adam Carolla podcast?
Because he was afraid that the date he got offered was now and he didn't want to ask for one later when it comes out. So he goes, just go out and do it and promote yourself. And, you know, maybe he'll like you enough that he'll bring you out again.
I do it once a month. So It's a great show.
Oh, so you can do it a lot.
Well, I do it once a month. Yeah.
Okay, that's
good. Yeah, I go up there. I love Adam and his audience.
It's my first time.
Oh, here's my advice. Interrupt. when Adam goes off, just interrupt. Do anything, derail him. Yeah. You got to take over the conversation.
That's what I used to sell comics about.
Gutsy.
I used to do Chelsea Lately a lot when Chelsea Handler had her talk show on E. And I used to tell comics, I go, in show business, there's certain times where you can't be polite. You have to interrupt.
Yeah.
They like, or you'll just sit there and not say a word on TV. And then everyone that you know watched it and went, why did you not talk?
So are you like me? Do you look at like, oh, Joe Coy was on Chelsea Lately and look what happened to his career. And I'm, you know,
I'm
the guy formerly hosting Fixing Joe podcast.
I'm beyond worrying. Like, there'll be other things that I will think about like that, but not. That's so long ago. Like, there'll be new shit where I'll be like,
Yeah, because you spin out in your head. I know you.
A little bit. But I'll tell you, having the regular life helps to spin you back out of that. When you don't have that, you just think career the whole time.
That's all
day.
Yeah.
So you need an interruption. Have you ever got close to meeting someone you really liked?
Yeah, of course. I have a string of long-term relationships.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, that's what I like. I don't like that, the other life, what do you call a player? That's not me. Mm-hmm. I like to meet people and get to know them and hang out for a while. And either it works or it doesn't work.
But, so what happens?
You know,
it's never gotten close?
No, it's gotten close several times.
You're an attractive, you're a good looking dude. You probably meet lots of girls.
I don't.
No,
you got to see my fan base. Yeah, it isn't. I shouldn't say that about my fan base. I guess I'm just trying to downplay it. I don't get hit on a lot. That is the truth.
You don't have to get hit on to meet people.
But I don't put myself out there either.
Oh, okay.
You know, I don't mind failing in my career, but I'm not going to fail in both.
I think
career.
That's
and
true.
Relationship.
Maybe that's what it is.
What's the AGT story? Come on.
Okay. America.
It's so good. I remember you feel like they screwed you or something.
Yeah. Well, if you go look it up online.
Oh, now we have homework.
I think they took it down. It had a lot of views. It was like a 1.8 million views or something.
What year is
this? It's probably about 9 years ago.
Okay.
Because my daughter's 11 and my son's 15. So my daughter was about, she's tiny. She's like one or one and a half. And my son, maybe he was five. Yeah, I guess he was five. And, you know, got on the show, went through the whole ringer. You got to audition for you want all that part of the story. I mean, you got to go in a room and audition for one lady. And then she goes, okay. And then you wait 4 hours and then you audition for the producers.
But aren't they sort of saying, hey, Joe, don't they come up to you? Like the producers have approached me several times in the past and they said, we'll get you on this show and we'll get you through to this level. There wasn't that sort of a deal done?
No.
Oh.
That's when I knew I didn't have a shot at this because I started to see mumbo jumbo going on. Is that even a word? Mumbo jumbo?
No, mumbo jumbo.
What's the word? I started seeing foul play.
Malarkey.
Malarkey. Where like another, like Dan, an example would be the first time I get on TV on America's Got Talent, I perform in front of like 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. Howard Stern, Heidi Klum, Howie Mandel, and Mel B are the judges.
Are you nervous?
Yeah. And it's like, it's such hard work doing these reality shows because comedians, we just hate sitting around in downtime. Right. You're in a room for 12 hours.
By around other people we deem less talented than us.
You're just sitting in a room, and my kids are young at the time, and they go, you got to bring your wife and kids.
Yeah, you got to have a story, right?
Yeah, we want them there. Right. So when you have a kid 5 and 1, it's very hard to entertain them for 12 hours in a fucking room with Subway sandwiches. I mean, that's all they had. It wasn't like a pimped out place that they had you waiting in. It was like a huge room with magicians and freaking
Jersey.
Yeah, No, the second round, it was in New York. But yeah, the first round was in Newark, New Jersey, because Howard Stern wanted it close to New York, so he didn't have to fly to L.A.
Got it.
So I'm there. I'm about to go out. I just entertained my kids for 12 hours, and then they're like, I'm literally about to get introduced and walk out on stage and have to do my thing. And they go, they're looking at it. We just ran out of time. You guys got to come back tomorrow. And my wife's like, she already took the day off once. Like, she has a job. Like, now she's got to take the day off again and bring our kids back and entertain them again for 12 hours in this room. And of course, you know, my wife's a trooper. There's been a few times where she's had to do shit for me in my career, you know? So she's like, all right. And then we went back
the next day
we wait again.
Kids are there too.
Kids are there
too. Little props.
Yep. They're there. And
more Subway sandwiches.
Yep.
Oh boy.
And then I go out.
Good catering.
And it goes as perfect as you could go.
Great.
Like I get a standing ovation. Howard Stern, everybody standing ovation. Oh my God, this is I start to almost cry if you watch the clip. I'm literally like that moment where you talk about how you want your career like to be at this. There was a second, and you see me get choked up. I wish you could show it right now, where I'm like, because Howie Mandel goes, how long you been doing this?
Yeah.
And I went,
oh, wow.
25 years. Wow. Right? I go, 25 years. And it was like, I start to almost cry because I thought, it's over. Yeah. This is it.
Yeah.
This is it.
Here we go.
Here we go.
I'm laughing because I can't tell you how many times I have said, here we go. Like the first time I did the Tonight Show, it went so well. Yeah. As I'm walking off stage, I go, that just bought me a house.
Yep.
Nope.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I've been on TV show. I go, here we go. Or somebody comes up to you after a show. Hey, I'm with so-and-so. I go, here we go. My whole career is false starts. Yeah. It never leads to anything. Yeah. That's why I love this story so much. Go ahead.
Yeah. But,
I'm
like, oh my God. My kids run out on stage.
Yeah.
There's even a moment where, you know, Howard Stern and Howie are asking me about, you know, how does it feel having your kids there watching you and your wife right there watching you, and they're cutting to them. And like I said, to have your kids run on stage and give you a big hug and while a standing ovation, it's like you won the World Series. That's what it felt like.
Right.
I just won the World Series. Mm. I'm getting a standing ovation with my family right there.
I remember watching this live, sitting at a bar alone, watching a bartender making drinks for other people, enjoying their lives.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, Joe, so what happened?
Yes. So then, which sucks about these shows, you don't even know if that's necessarily going to air. They're like, even though you just got a standing, like, none of it's real. They can re-edit anything they want and decide if you fit their program or not. Mm. And I'm like, fuck, they could not air that. What if they don't air it? That doesn't help me.
Right.
Fuck. So I have to wait like 3 or 4 months. Then I get the call. They are going to air it.
Mm.
And now we're going to film the second round in New York City. And there's going to be an audience again. So I'm working on my set for the next round.
How many minutes are you doing?
2.
Right. Which if you don't understand stand-up comedy, this is like if this goes well, it's great. If it doesn't go well, you're in a free fall and mm-hmm. there's no recovering from 2 minutes. It's right. like when the plane starts going down, it's in a, you can go into a comedy death spiral.
Right.
2 minutes is not enough time to sort of establish yourself. You know, like for instance, when I do a, my hour long set, sometimes I'll take 3-4 minutes and just sort of mess around. And, you know, sort of play rope-a-dope and let the audience think, I don't know what I'm doing.
Me too.
Especially if I'm doing like play shows.
Rope-a-dope.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like tonight I'm at the comedy store and I'm on the big room and it's me. And
what
like,
time?
Like 8 p.m. maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, Eliza and Kevin Nealon and other comics like that. And, you know, I know these people that,
I love Kevin Nealon.
That don't know me and mm-hmm. I'll sit there and just sort of like mess around, and I call it rope-a-dope. I let them think I'm out and I don't know what I'm doing.
Really?
And then I just boom, boom. But you can't do that in 2 minutes. In 2 minutes, I'd be rushing.
Then I start crushing.
So funny. All the New York comics have that impression of me. Nobody in LA. All right. So now,
second round.
Mm-hmm.
So now I realized that Dan Natterman is also in the second round with me, who's a friend of ours.
And how would you describe Dan?
Dan's,
without using the word nebbishy.
He's a very Woody Allen-like Jewish comedian who's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, but now Dan isn't playing really the nerdy guy that he used to be on stage when he started. He's like got his hair's like fucking done. He's trying to be handsome now.
Wow.
He's got the hair done. He's got the cooler clothes on. You're like, Dan, what are you doing?
Right.
Be the nerd.
How does a guy like Dan make money? I wonder how everybody makes money. I'd like to audit every comedian to see how they make money. I really would. Like,
funny.
I'm just confused. I love Dan. Dan's really funny, but there are some people that are still in the business. I'm like, how are they still in the business?
Yeah.
Where are they playing?
He plays at the Cellar every night of the week.
Does he really?
He's just there every night of the week.
How does he do?
They own 5 clubs on one street.
It's amazing.
they do all of them.
And they just bought the McDonald's.
That's what I just heard.
On the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're amazing.
And I burn a bridge. I don't even work there.
What did you do?
I'll tell you.
Okay. All right. Joe Matarese is my guest. America's Got Talent. He made it through round one, got a standing ovation. His kids ran out on stage. And now we're in New York City and there's going to be a huge crowd there.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they come into, they call it the holding room. They bring everybody into this huddle. It's like 200 performers.
Yeah.
They had just filmed. They would film different categories and sections. Mm-hmm. So they filmed like 8 magicians, right?
Yeah.
And then they had like 8 comedians and we were next. And then they came out and had a meeting and said, we're not going to do it with an audience. We had technical difficulty. We're going to film that. What we just filmed, we're redoing. We can't use it. And sorry, everybody, but this whole round is going to be with no audience.
Well, you can't do comedy without an audience.
Yeah, so that's what you're saying,
this
right?
This sounds like a COVID situation.
Yeah, that's what it felt
like. You cannot, I mean, you don't have to be, you. Everybody knows you got to have an audience.
Yeah, so stupid me, this is a little mistake that I made, but I could tell it was already fixed. This is how I knew it was fixed and why I brought up Dan Natterman. Dan Natterman, totally different than me, but same age as me, white guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, these reality shows don't have multiple people that are similar.
But does he have 2 kids that can run out on stage?
No, but I already know that he is skipping this round. He doesn't even have, I'm like,
he
got a bye. So that's when you know this thing's fixed.
Yeah.
This guy's already won or going further than I'm going to go.
Right.
Because he's not here. Why is he not here?
Yeah.
And there's an 8-year-old kid who's doing stand-up. Wendy Liebman, she's a female.
Yeah.
But there's no other white guy standing around me except me. And I'm going, and Dan was the other one, and he's already
to the
next round.
Was Dan on the first night with you when you got the standing ovation? How was the crowd reaction?
He was on something like that.
Did he get a standing ovation?
No, but he got the yes.
Yeah.
So I go perform in front of no audience. And this is a little bit of the mistake I made. I should have switched the material I had planned for the audience.
I would have just done crowd work.
I kind of did.
I would have been like, first of all, you guys suck.
I kind of did.
That's what I
literally because I can read people pretty well.
Yeah.
Within 5 seconds, I'm like, they're giving me the stink eye on purpose. I could feel it. I went, I'm the same guy. You gave me a standing ovation. Why are you acting like You've never seen me ever.
So you think they're setting you up to fail so they can get you out and get Dan through?
Yeah.
Why not just not air your standing ovation? So wait a minute, you're supposed to, in the storyline,
it looks great on camera to have you, when your kids come out and all that, dude, it's fucking, that's why it got 1.8 million views on YouTube.
You should have said you had some sort of disease. People with diseases, or you just lost a parent. You need more of a storyline. Like you're getting your gallbladder removed. It's just make up something.
I give comics advice too when they're doing the show, because I'm not going to say who it is, but I know someone who's doing it this year. And I said, when they start to figure out what your storyline is, go with it. Don't go against it. Because they said to me, if you lose this round, you're out of the business. Your whole career's over, right? And I go, no. I'm like going the other way with it because I'm thinking, I don't want comedians and industry people to think I'm quitting comedy if I don't win on this shitty show.
I'll tell you what I did, and I bet you did something similar.
You did the show?
No. I've never done America's Got Talent because I don't know. I guess I probably should have. I think I probably should have done a lot of things that would have helped my career, but I always thought comedy can't be judged. Like all five of those judges could hate me, but 10 million people across the world could love me. So you can't quantify comedy. Right. It's too subjective.
I always say that. No one's better. They're just, those people are good.
Well,
like, you saw four comedians. You're not going to say Kevin Nealon is better than Orny Adams. You're just going, they're both funny.
I would have walked out and you could see me doing this. I would have walked out and I would have said, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Well, that's what I did. There's no audience. That's what I did. I said,
this is, why don't you get your shit together, America's Got Talent? And when you're ready, when you can put on a show, I don't know if this is the first season you've done this, but when you can put on a show where you don't have technical difficulties, then call me. And by the way, where's Dan Natterman? Now, just cut to the clip of all the judges standing and giving me a standing ovation from the last appearance. Thank you.
Right.
Good night. That's what I would have. I would have absolutely ripped on the entire thing.
Well, that's smart because you know who you are. So yeah. I used to struggle with knowing who I am because there's two sides of me. One is the guy who snaps like you just did and gets pissed off.
That's not snapping. That's...
Yeah, but it's funny when you do it. I've noticed when I snap... It's not funny. Huh. It's just like, ooh, this guy's mad now.
Yeah.
Like, there's no funny. You're funny when you do it.
Well, thank you. Well,
I'm not.
You got to get that sort of that Rickles.
So I have both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe because you're Jewish and it's a Jewish thing complaining. I do a joke now, and I hope it doesn't come across anti-Semitic.
It already sounds it.
Both my neighbors are Jewish on both sides of my house. Yeah. And the one woman who lives next to me is like a Seinfeld character. She's so funny to me because whenever I'm doing anything, she just hovers over me. Like, what are you doing? What do you got? And the joke is if you want to get rid of them, just bring up blue collar subjects. And they like, cause I'll be like, it's a power washer. She's like, what is that? And I'll like explain it. She's like, good talking to you.
You must be in a good neighbor surrounded by Jews.
Yeah.
Well, you've done well. I'd like to audit you. I'd like to know how this happened. Oh, your wife.
My wife's
what
a
does
doctor.
She do? She's a doctor. Unbelievable. What kind of doctor? There's no justice.
She's a neuropsychologist. She does Alzheimer's research at Columbia Medical Center.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She doesn't make crazy doctor money, but she makes very good.
Yeah, it's steady. You got PhD health insurance. Money.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
All right. So what did you do in front of the audience?
So then
the empty audience.
I did a little of both.
Okay.
I called them out, like
gotta
you said.
Gotta commit.
I go, this doesn't seem right. You know, you guys loved me before. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. Why are you guys all arm crossed right now? Like, come on. And then I went into a bit that I had planned for an audience that is more of a story. And when you do, and I'll tell you the joke on your podcast, because the odd thing is it's what made me lose on America's Got Talent. And I think it's my highest ranking bit ever on my TikTok. Mm. I think it has 1.8 million views on my TikTok, and dead silence and like almost, I think they put sound effects in like you were doing.
Yeah.
They put them in on those shows. They zoomed in on my hand and made it look like I was nervous. They're just zoomed on my fingers.
Wow.
And it was a story. The bit was about how, let me think, my wife has a friend. I used to say, if you're going to get married, marry non-American.
Hmm.
And this is, I go, this joke's based on one situation. That's the way I write jokes. I watch, if something happens once, I go, that's everybody. Mm-hmm. And then boom, I do the joke. And I go, it's based on my wife's cousin who married a Brazilian woman. She shows up at this rental house that we had for a week, 9 months pregnant, cooking and cleaning for all the kids. Mm-hmm. She's disciplining everybody's kids. And she's somehow 9 months pregnant and shredded with muscles. Right. She's like in shape. I go, I pulled her aside. I go, how are you pulling this off? This is unbelievable. I'm watching you in action. She goes, this was true. This really happened. She goes, Joe, in Brazil, we are taught at an early age to be great wives. Right. And I go, oh, man. And I make a face like, fuck, like I blew it. Like, look, yeah. I got this American wife over here. I go, my wife was taught at an early age to teach her husband how to be a great wife.
Right.
Like, that's the payoff. It's one joke. That's what I did. And it was such
for the 2 minutes
for the, I think I might have one other joke.
See, I would think that you're better off doing boom, boom.
That's
boom.
What I'm saying.
Yes.
Yes. I should have. Cause the first episode I did, you know, you're getting old when you go to an empty bar and you go, I love this place.
How about this? You should have done.
They wanted me to be the dad.
Okay.
And I don't think I did it in episode two, because episode one, they're like, if you lose, how are you going to feed your kids? Blah, 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 blah.
Here's option number two. Besides the Orny Adams just going after the whole production. And
you got to know what works best for you.
I would have crapped on Howard Stern. I would have gone after Howie Mandel.
Yeah, you would have been great at that.
Why don't you go back to Canada? Yeah. I would have, you know, I would have gone. Here's option two.
But it's got to work for me. It's got
2 minutes of Dan Natterman jokes that he hasn't done yet. I would bury him. I would bury Natterman for the future appearances. That's what I would do.
Go out and do Natterman classics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Dan comes out next round.
And yeah,
the whole crowd's like, we know this.
You're doing shows. It'd be great. It would be a great reality show spin. It would be great. That's how you play a reality show.
See, I'm coming across so fucking neurotic and fucked up that you're fixing me on your show where we're supposed to be what's wrong with Orny Adams.
Can we get you on Howie Mandel's podcast? Have you done that?
No, is that a good one?
Yeah, I did it. You should do it and tell this story.
That'd
I wonder if he would allow I doubt he would.
He's still a judge. He's not gonna tell you how much foul play goes on that show. It's his money cow.
Yeah, that's true.
That show's that's so much bullshit in it. It's ridiculous.
We went out on I did some dates with him last year in New England or New York, the tri-state area. And I went on before. I go, Howie, you know, I'm really kind of big. He goes, do whatever you got to do. I go, what if I get a standing ovation? Because these are theaters. He goes, do whatever you want to do. And he goes, keep going. Like, he'd rather I take up time. So I had a great set. I destroyed. And he came out and goes, that's how you do it. If I was on America's show, I would give you the golden button. He did this whole like thing.
That's
and
smart,
I'm,
that
I go,
he
here
that.
We go.
I got it. He's taking me.
Yeah, nothing happened. Nothing. No had, deals with the Howie Mandel.
I had that with Craig Ferguson once, where I opened for him on the road, and then he goes, when are you doing my TV show?
Yeah.
And then like 3 months later, I'm doing his TV show, then meet with his production company, then the fucking guy falls off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Where do they go? They just start
hiding. They're on, I'm not saying this about Craig. I'm not saying this about Howie. I'm saying this about a lot of other people, because I don't think Howie is this guy. But I think a lot of people in this business say things just to see the reaction. Mm-hmm. Just so they can feel powerful for that moment, to see that it excites you.
I always say.
And also, some people tell me they may believe it in the time.
I think comedians, I feel like there's only been one comedian since I've been alive that actually really helped other comedians that were good. Because now Now you'll see a comedian. Like you see all these shows that Netflix puts on where it's like, this is all his favorite comedians. Right. And you watch and you go, no, it's not. That's not Bill Burr's favorite comedians. These guys stink.
Well, like, I'll give it.
Bill Burr knows a lot funnier guys than this, or Pete Davidson, and here's all his favorite comedians. You're like, no, it's not. Like,
don't
you put think guys
Netflix
that are good.
Telling them who to
they
put
must
on
be.
Sense? Who's the one? Let me give me
one
a
guy.
One guy.
And a lot of them became famous off
Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
Did I get it?
Yeah.
There you go.
How come there's never been a Rodney who's like put on people that were good enough to become famous on and give them a real and hook them up?
I would. In fact, I talked about this on somebody's podcast, and then they end up, we were talking about the person outside. I don't want to say who they are because they're going through something right now. And that person made fun of me because I said even small things, like at the time I would have paid for a bus to go all around Manhattan and drive the comics to their gigs. Like I'm a generous person. I don't feel threatened by people, but you know, here's another here we go experience.
Here we go.
And this is not a dig on this person, but one day I woke up, I was living out here, and my phone blew up, like text, and I'm like, what's going on? And it turned out that Kevin Hart was on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern asked Kevin, you used to be jokey, you used to do all these characters, and then you started to get real. What happened? What changed in your career and really, you know, launched you? And he said, I was watching this guy, Orny Adams, in this documentary, and it made me think I've got to work harder, and I've got to da-da-da. And I thought, here we go. Kevin's going to call me. This guy's a movie star. We're going to do a buddy film, right?
Nothing.
Never heard from him. My manager or agent at the time reach out to his. Mm-hmm. He said, let me see. I'll see what I can do. I don't even know what got passed on to Kevin. You know, it's just a strange bit. Like, why? Yeah. I'm not a threat to Kevin. My style's very different.
Wouldn't you think we're fine? I would think we're finally at a point that a comedian, because everything is now like, what's the word they use for it? Like guerrilla warfare out there, where it's like you can make your own shit now.
Yeah.
Like a Louis C.K. was really the first comedian who was like, I'm renting the garden and I'm doing the show. Yeah. I'm selling my own shows off of my website. Like he's the one comedian. I went, when are we going to see a comedian represent other comedians? What? And actually represent good ones that should be big and that you go, wow.
But why are they threatened?
They must be threatened, right?
At minimum, I would have thought Kevin Hart could produce my comedy special. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be beautiful? I mean, it's like we're completely different and he's got the power to do that. Why wouldn't he do that? Why wouldn't other people produce my... I don't get it. I don't get why comedians, and it happens in podcasting too. You'll see you're invited on some podcasts, but not others because maybe that person doesn't want to help. I've invited people on this podcast mm-hmm. that I'm friends with, and they don't want to come on because they think they have so much equity, they don't want to help me. They don't want to help me grow my pod. Bobby Lee was very generous. He goes, I'm coming on because I want to help you grow your podcast.
Really?
But people aren't like that. And comics...
There's not a lot like that.
No. And that's why I wish I was a musician. These musicians, they all get up on stage together. They support each other. They cover each other's songs. You know, they pitch each other. But comics, that's why when I was in that documentary or when I lived in New York, it's like... I gave people a reason to bury me and not like mm-hmm. me. And this is the wrong business because I'm looking to the camera now. If you want to know how every single comedian watches a special that's on Netflix or HBO or whatever, Showtime, we sit there, we turn it on, and we're waiting for that one thing that lets us say, this guy sucks, she sucks, they suck, whatever they are, I'm turning it off. We just look for reasons not to like other comedians.
Right.
I don't know why.
And all the things that have been successful for comedians to me, like even on, I said I took the six-hour flight from New York, and you know, you download a bunch of shit on your phone so you have stuff to watch when you're on the plane, even though they got shit on the plane to watch. Yeah. Now I literally just download Seinfeld episodes and I'm like, I'm like, these are so good that I'm watching these episodes for the 10th time and they're still good. And I'm going, you know why they're good? Because Jerry Seinfeld surrounded himself with home run hitters in every position. Even the little parts are fucking hilarious. The writer's hilarious. Everybody's unbelievable. I'm like, why is everybody accepting mediocrity? And like, I was a little jealous because I saw like a comedian like Pete Davidson as a new, like where you said you get jealous of others.
I don't know if jealous is the word.
Or where I go, what?
Angry.
Well, yeah.
At the lack of justice.
The only things that make me get a little angry where I go, oh, like it's when they're doing exactly what I thought I wanted to do, which is like act in a show that's about my life and have really good actors around me and doing a single camera show that has some drama mixed with the funny and like, and I saw Pete Davidson has a show coming out where he's got like Steve Buscemi in it and like Edie Falco's, like there's just all home run hitter actors and I'm like that, okay, that this guy's probably pretty smart, look what he did, look who's in this, you know. So
why don't comedians help other comedians?
I think because they're like, it's such a rat race for them. We're all like, we're we have, my wife knows, I mean, she gets it because she's a psychologist and she knows how she meets my comedian friends. And she just shows me how we're all very similar. We're all like, we're like on this like wheel, just trying to make, to get ourselves successful.
But do you think we're too self-involved, too narcissistic?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Scared. I mean, I don't get it. I like to help people. Like, that's my nature.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, I want to connect Joe with Howie Mandel. Like, I don't know why the world...
There's not a lot of guys like that. And I always think the guys that are like that never get huge.
I'll tell you something. Godfrey was on my podcast last week, and there was a time I was auditioning for something, and I wasn't right for it. And I said, you want Godfrey for this.
Mm-hmm. I'm that way too.
Yeah,
I'm like, why am I even auditioning? You know who's perfect for this?
Yeah, like I kind of want the project to be right, and why not? I figure there's plenty of stuff out there. I think he did get it.
He got it.
I think he did, and I don't think I ever told him that. But you know,
yeah. Well, maybe someday we'll see the next Rodney. But it just seems like I don't know why that. Maybe networks don't let somebody have enough power. Do you think Rodney was really picking those people out himself, or was somebody telling him?
I know he was.
Put Seinfeld on, put Bill Hicks on, put Roseanne Barr. I mean, every person went on to be huge.
Huge. Yeah, it was the HBO Young Comedy Special, or no, Rodney Dangerfield's presenter. Whatever.
Yeah, they were like on HBO. It was before.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even comedy specials existed. Really, there might have been a few comedy specials back then.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with. I don't. It's such a bummer because you can feel no support in this business. So I would say to you, I bet. And I'm so sick of talking about this documentary, but I guarantee when you saw me in that, you saw more of yourself than not yourself in my character. And if we were musicians, the musician community would go, no, we're all like that.
Yeah.
That's what Seinfeld said. We're all like that. But instead we go, nah, now we have it on record, a reason to hate Orny Adams. We're all moving forward. We're all going to block his career. Clubs are going to say that I'm difficult. I'm the least difficult person to work with.
Yeah, you didn't look difficult. Yeah. I really related to the part where, because people have said this to me, when Barry Katz tells you that you just need to be, just go sit, do your set and walk off.
Yeah.
Just what does he say? Just don't say anything, because that's the problem. Stephen Wright just says, this is my act, and he walks off, says thanks, and then never talks again. And like, I've had so many people tell me, like, just shut the fuck up. Like, I'm very OCD.
Mm.
So like, when I go into a show, like, just this past Saturday, I was at City Winery in Philly. Awesome room.
Yeah.
But I could tell that they do bands most of the time.
Right.
And my opening act is in semi-dim lights. And I'm like, I could tell I'm annoying the lighting person.
Right.
I could just tell.
But you're doing what's right for the show.
Yes.
And I never understood why.
I could tell I'm annoying.
People get upset by that. You're not being a prima donna. You're going, hey, it's going to be better if they can see me more. I ask for the audience to be lit, like usually 15 to 20% more than most comics. Mm-hmm. I like to see their faces, to work off of them. I listen, it's weird. This business is weird. It's disheartening. It's unhealthy at times. The obsession. I mean, you dealt with it. In fact, I would say you were ahead of the curve discussing your own mental issues, like your mental health, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did a podcast called Fixing Joe. You were very open about, I think, medication you took.
You still take medication.
You're uncomfortable.
No.
You still take medication. What are you taking?
I take antidepressants.
Hmm.
For the last 13, 14 years.
And they must help, right?
Tremendously. I had a bad anger problem when we talked about the cellar and how I burnt bridges.
Yeah, who'd you yell at?
I yelled at an audience member. There was like three different incidents where it was like I did something bad and got put on. Someone said this about the cellar. It's the only club where you get like kicked out and then you got to like work your way back in and then you can get kicked out again. You're in like purgatory with the cellar.
Huh.
Multiple comedians have had this.
Do they let you know when you're in purgatory?
No, like I didn't know for a while.
You just stopped getting spots.
You're like, what the hell happened? This was, I mean, I knew that I said something. I'm honest on podcasts. I said something anti-Semitic on stage at an all Israeli owned comedy club to a guy in a yarmulke who was making cricket noises after all my punchlines.
Mm.
So like,
don't say what you said. It'll upset me. Do you want to say it? Go ahead.
I mean, I called him what he was, you know.
What?
I said you're Jew fuck. That's what I said. Because he had a yarmulke on and he's making fucking cricket noises, right?
No, you wouldn't do that nowadays.
No, like, it's funny because I said I'm going on Corolla and I'm asking this guy who's my publicist, I'm like, well, what should I talk about? I said, should I bring up medication? And I even wrote down on the list that I don't get angry on stage anymore, but just recently I had a blip where I got mad. I hadn't got mad at someone in like 10 years. Mm. And I went, oh my God. Like, I thought the medicine made it go away completely, but this guy, like, he hit that note. Like, that kid who had the yarmulke on who made the cricket noise. Like, my anger comes from insecurity. Mm. So if you tell me I suck at comedy while I'm doing comedy.
And sucking at it.
I can get really angry.
Yeah.
It's still, even on meds.
Do you want to apologize to the Jews right now? Do you want to look into the camera and just say that you would never say that again? And what did your publicist?
I even told Esty, the woman who ran the club, I said, I said Jew fuck because he was Jewish and he was making cricket noises. It was the only thing. It's not like I didn't have a punchline. I just went, you. And then everyone in the audience was his friend. So I lost the whole room when I said that. Yeah. And now I have 12 more minutes left. Yeah. And the whole room hates my guts.
And they don't let you get off there early. Like, just so you know, the Comedy Cellar, one time I got called the next day because I always went on every night after either Chappelle or Chris Rock or Dave Attell. So they had the 11:35 spot, and then I did the 11:55 every single night for years. Right. And Esty, I love her, and I love Lucian. I love all the people that made me work harder because it only made me stronger to have to go on after acts like that every single night. After Rock every night while he was preparing for Bigger and Blacker. Yeah. Okay?
I can remember following him a lot, too, when he coming in to do spot. I'm like, every night he keeps going on right before me.
So he went on. He's got his writers with him. They get up and leave. There was only a few people in the audience that night. Everybody
They left. All leave, yeah.
They all left. So now there's...
I used to shit on Chris Rock because I knew he was already in his Porsche and gone.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, you shitting on him. I'm like, he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
He's leaving so fast after he does those sets.
So there were zero people in the room, meaning nobody but the staff.
Right.
And the host gets up there and says, okay, thank you, Chris Rock, everybody. And as everyone's leaving, now there's zero people. Coming to the stage now, our next comedian, Orny Adams. And I'm sitting in the back, like I would have done on America's Talent. I go, there's nobody here. Well, I'm going to get up on stage. This is ridiculous. I go, I'm supposed to get up there and tell jokes to nobody. And so nothing was happening. And then my time elapsed, and then they brought up the next, and now people started to come in, and I got a call the next day, which kind of makes sense, and they said, we do that, so if people do come downstairs, they'll see that there's a show going on. I'm like, but don't they also see there's nobody there? I mean, it's like, but that was the only time I ever got a call, and I may have gotten up on stage that night for a few minutes, but I really sort of resisted and was angry, and then maybe I got up there and just, like, did ABCs or recited, poetry, whatever, maybe Bob Dylan songs. So it's strange. You look perplexed by this.
Oh, because I...
Yeah, you have another story?
No, I keep thinking about where you said, do you want to apologize?
Oh, to the Jews, yeah.
And...
Now's the time.
And I do, because...
good.
Well, I remember Noam, I had a sit down with Esty, and she understood. I said, I said I'm not an anti-Semitic guy. I no problem with Jewish people. And she goes, I understand, it's what he was, and that's what you went at. And then Noam sat down with me and he goes, that came from a real place. That doesn't just come out. That's what he said. And I didn't have an answer back then. This is a long time ago. And then I remember, like, maybe even days after that, I went, oh, maybe he's right. Cause I even do jokes over the years in my act about how my grandmother was, like, very racist, and how my first girlfriend was Jewish. I grew up in an all Jewish area. My high school was 75% Jewish. And my first girlfriend was this girl, I'll say her name on your podcast, Dana Snitoff, right?
Sounds cute.
She was cute.
Yeah.
And her parent, they ended, her parents knew Don Rickles, believe it or not. Huh. Still to this day, it's one of my regrets that I almost got to meet Rickles and I wasn't there when they were hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And I brought her home to meet my Italian family on Christmas Eve. And my grandma pulls me in another room and said, "You shouldn't be with this girl." And I was in love with her. Like, she was my first love. Like,
how old are you?
I'm 18. Yeah. She's 16.
Yeah.
And she goes, "You should be with someone your own kind." That's what she said. And on stage, I go, next week I brought home an Italian guy.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Which always kills. But,
I don't think that's crushes. Necessarily racist. I think that, like, there's a lot of inclusion.
But my grandmom used to just say things, you know, like how maybe a Jewish grandma might say you should marry another Jewish person. Or I don't know if, I always thought she said, that period of Italian grandmom, mm-hmm. that she's not alive anymore. Yeah. Those grandmoms said a lot of racist stuff. And I grew up in that kind of household in this Jewish area, and there was stuff said. So when that came out, when he said that came from a real place, it did. Mm. And I noticed.
So your grandmother got you fired from the comedy cellar.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is I had stuff about my grandmom in one of my one-man shows. My new special, actually, is very one-man show-like. Mm. It's called Mullets and Mixtapes. It's about me growing up in the 80s versus raising a kid now. So half the stage looks like my bedroom in 1982, right. And the other half of the stage looks like my bedroom, my kid's bedroom now.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's a huge LED screen behind me, and different pictures come up at different times
Where'd you shoot this?
I shot that at a small theater in Mamaroneck, New York, near where I live.
And where's this going to air? Because it's coming out soon.
I don't know. He's pitching it.
Who paid for this?
My manager paid for the whole thing.
Who's your manager?
His name's Adam Grayson. At Grayson Entertainment. He paid for the whole special.
Do you know what he paid?
$50? He paid way too much.
Over 50, you think?
Over 50. I know how much he paid.
Wow. And so he's
going to recoup
that?
Let's put it this way. It costs like 20 grand to rent the LED screen for the weekend.
Wow. So how is he going to recoup this?
He's going to have to try to sell it.
Wow. Wow, that's incentive.
Yeah.
I wish somebody believed in me like that. Yeah. Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
You had a moment. So you just say, "I'm sorry to the Jews."
So what I wanted to say,
show me some evolution.
But here. I wanted to say at the end of that was, and then I moved to New York City, and I noticed I moved to New York City when I was about 23, mm-hmm. 24. Some of that racism that is coming at you from family members, like where I talk about evolving, I think I had some of it. It was there when it's getting thrown at you.
So no one was right.
So it did come from a real place. But I noticed when I moved to New York, where I talk about evolving, I slowly was around a lot more Jewish people, or a lot more African-American people, a lot more Latino people. And I started to open up who I was and become who I really am, you know? And so there was a piece.
You kind of realize when you live in a place like New York City, because you're mm-hmm. all on the subway together every single day,
yeah.
you kind of realize we're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
Everybody's the same.
And I still to this day say it on stage. My closing bit for the last 3 years has been about my trip to Israel. And I'm not bullshitting. And I think Jewish people realize they can feel the truth in it. Greatest place I've ever been in my life, and how much I love the people in Israel and how open they were and how warm they are.
Why don't you reach out to Noam? Why don't you reach out to Esty?
Well,
because it sounds like
I did get
it's one of the great, the Comedy Cellar in New York City is one of the greatest mm-hmm. clubs in the world. And I will say this about both of them and their father. They love comics. They love comedy. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the, it's a challenge working that's not an easy room to work either at times. And you want to be there.
Well, I
want to be there. Tonight I wish I'd be there.
I did get back in.
Good.
Years later, apologized, had a little sit down. And then I did something at the Village Underground that was totally a different situation.
Are you a self-sabotager?
Yeah, I think I am. I don't know if you run into this. L.A. might be different than New York, but my hair's gray. I'm 55 years old. When I go into New York City and I perform, the people there in New York City are in their early 20s in the audience. And there's a disconnect. And it's not easy for me to do what my material is now to a young audience. So sometimes I'll go outside of that and say and make fun of, oh, I'm the old, you know, I'll make jokes about being old.
Yeah.
Right. And they didn't tell me they had a problem with it. Again, I'm not getting spots. And then Essie goes, I want to talk to you. And she had someone new managing it. And we sat down and talked. And she's like, why are you lashing out at the crowd for being young? I'm like, I'm just trying to survive. I'm trying to be funny. I'm not lashing out. She's like, you just do your material. We have lots of older comedians just like you. They don't have a problem with our audiences. I'm like, well, my material is a lot about being a dad and living in this house where I live.
But they would get that. You know that. You remember when we were kids, we would laugh at the older comics doing older stuff?
Yeah.
So she might be right.
This is like 8-9 years ago. I've evolved past that. So then I said, okay, you're right. I won't do that. And then I got back in. And then I couldn't find a parking spot.
Uh-huh.
I'm like 3 minutes late to my spot. I just make it. I just run on stage, do my set. I don't realize I'm getting the light. And finally I go, am I getting the light? And then all of a sudden the MC sticks his head in. He was just behind the light. And now I couldn't see him. And then he stuck, because you know how sometimes you're on stage and you're going, I guess the next comic's not here.
Yeah, of course.
That's what I'm thinking. I guess I got to run longer.
Yeah, if you don't see the light, you assume somebody didn't show up and you have to keep going. And there's no signal for that. Yeah. There's no green. Keep going. So you ran the light.
It was like three strikes and you're out. And then I have not been in since. And I apologized again. Yeah. And I never heard back. I was like... But I never felt comfortable in that
place. That's what I love about New York City. That's what I love about this.
That you don't feel comfortable?
No, that you don't run the light. In L.A., people run the light. Drives me nuts. Because
they're famous. They can do it.
No,
right?
Even non-famous people. Nobody they respects just do it. The light.
No one cares.
It's crazy. Joe, I want to end on a positive, funny note. I wanted to talk about your...
Too.
We've gone over. We've
I
got.
Too.
We've talked about your mental illness. No, I'm not going to edit these. Everything
you
stays
are,
in.
Right?
No, I charge. I charge for each edit. Like if a comic calls the next day and they're like, hey, can you cut that line out?
Oh, I don't mean
out?
It. I don't mean that. I meant do you edit your own episode?
I do, but there's nothing to edit out. This was a great episode. But I mean, like... Just fast. So you've been medicated for depression. You feel like it's
never
working.
Depression though.
Never
that anger was connected to anxiety. There was an anxiety. I used to not even be able to fly on airplanes. I would get so fucking nervous.
Okay.
And I can do it now.
Good.
Like I would not go to LA because I didn't like to fly.
Why did you stop doing your podcast?
You know what made me stop doing Fixing Joe is. This is true. I heard Al Lubell on Mark Maron's podcast, and he was jealous of Mark for being, I guess the word would be like he just knew who he was and being very, a very, what's the word I'm trying to use?
Comfortable with himself.
Comfortable with himself, confident. And he was saying how he's just so insecure that he worries about every move that he makes, right? And he sounded so sad and pathetic on the podcast, Al Lubell. And when I heard that episode, I went, no wonder you're still fucked up. You're asking your audience for advice every week on Fixing Joe. You can't be fixed if you need them to fix you. Like, you need to fix yourself. You need to know what's wrong with you. And I went, this is unhealthy to be that. I go, unless you're Woody Allen and you being that neurotic that you need everybody's help, you're going to be fucked up forever if you're just in search of them helping you. So I said, I got to stop doing Fixing Joe.
The premise was each week you would invite your audience to assess you.
And my guest, yeah.
Oh, and your guest.
Yeah. So, but I never figured out how to take live phone calls. So what I would do is I had a voicemail number. Right. It was like a Google Voice. I would post on my social media, here's my problem today. What do you got? And I would let them leave advice. And then I would pick the phone calls that I wanted.
Yeah.
I'd play them on the episode. And then I'd answer them almost like we were talking to them.
It's amazing. Are you able to make a living doing stand-up comedy if you didn't have your wife's income?
If I was just me and just single?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
But don't you think that's amazing? You're 55 years old. You can still make money doing stand-up comedy?
Yeah,
that's
it's pretty
amazing.
Cool. It's
You've
pretty
never
cool.
had a day job. I think that's remarkable.
I had a day job during COVID for like
really?
4 months.
Oh, now you tell me. Now we got something fun to end on.
Oh,
all right,
yeah.
Forget everything I just said.
You'll love this.
What is it?
So I've always been pretty handy, so I don't know. I might bring
Home Depot.
I might bring that up with Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
No, I had a friend who has his own construction business, and he's like, I could use someone to help. So for like 4 months, I was driving up to Connecticut every day and busting my ass and doing that. That helps you with comedy too when you do something that sucks. Oh,
I would think it would help you with your head. I think that's really cool. I thought you meant like a real day. Like I thought you were answering phone calls remotely for AT&T or customer service.
I don't know how. I would not know how to do a regular job like that. Just going there, like I'm pretty handy, believe it or not.
You are. Yeah. I got some stuff around the house I need fixed.
You show me.
Yeah, how about fixing Orny's house? Your next podcast.
That was the show.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. I pitched a show like that too. I wanted to have all comics help me fix just my house.
That's what
every week.
Well, I'm trying to get Carolla up here to fix. He was like, I want to come up here.
I heard his place is amazing.
Yeah, I have. Oh, his studio?
His house, I heard.
Oh, I haven't been to it, but I don't. We just took our friendship to a new level where we text. Uh-huh. So that's something new.
He builds a lot of shit, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's good with cars too, right?
All cars at his place, his studio. They couldn't be nicer. I love that show. But quickly, Joe Mattery is my guest. You have a special coming out. We don't know when. Isn't that contemporary?
I would
no buyer yet.
My manager has 4 months to sell it in our contract together. Him and I are.
And then what happens?
We're 50-50 owners.
Okay. Even though.
And then if he doesn't sell it, it's going to be on YouTube for free.
Okay. Which I think is great. I've got mine on YouTube, and look at all the.
Yeah.
You know, it's leading to private shows, corporate shows, shows in clubs.
You got a lot of fucking views on yours, dude.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
What do you think is the key to having a lot of views on a comedy special? Mullets and Mixtapes is mine, by the way. If you're someone who grew up in the 80s, you probably would love this.
I would suggest first be funny. I think, I think the more people watch it, the algorithm passes it on to those people. So there's a lot of people that have seen Sebastian specials or Bill Burr's. And after that's done, it throws mine on. So I think I'm lucky. I should not.
No, I like the way it came out. Mine's a little.
I can't wait to see it.
Is a little more unique. To be honest, my OCD came into the editing process a little bit.
Of course.
I wanted to cut some stuff from, we taped two shows and the editor did not want me to use anything from the second show.
Huh.
And I didn't understand.
Interesting.
Because some guy in a white hat in the front row.
Oh,
I'm really? Like, nobody cares about that guy in the white hat.
Can't they just use close-ups?
That's what I said. I said, crop them out. It's 4 minutes of
and
material.
And then just go to crowd reactions from the first show.
That's what I said.
You need to edit this? I know how to edit this stuff. I'm great.
They wouldn't
let me. I edited all three of my specials.
I edited the first two of mine.
Yeah. Mine have been a Netflix, Comedy Central, Showtime. I just sit there and edit it. It's a linear timeline.
Oh,
it's so easy.
Yeah.
So easy. Well, Joe, what drives you nuts? You're married. You have kids. Is there one thing that I can riff off of? That what's wrong with Joe Matarese? Otherwise, I'll just end it right here. I told you to be prepared.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
You said no.
But first of all, you walked.
I thought I was fixing you.
You walked in. You're doing my podcast.
No, I didn't mean it like that. No, I think this is a little more unique what you're doing. But I wanted you to know that you're doing better than you think, and that I think if you had a wife and kids and the normal life that you always say that you think you want, then you end up wanting the career. So it's like you're not going to be happy if you have that. So like the positive about me is it's like if you're just like this week, I was like, I'm coming to LA. Mm-hmm. I'm doing these podcasts and my special really isn't out. Like I could have been negative because at first I was like, should I just cancel the LA trip?
Yeah.
Why do I need to go to LA? I'm promoting a special that's not out yet. And then I went, why can't you be like a human being and go, what do you want to do in LA while you're there? What would be fun? And I'm like, I'm going to go to the Dodgers. I'm a huge baseball fan.
Right.
I went to watch the Phillies play the Dodgers last night by myself. Like where you were saying, you feel like shit. I love being by myself.
Well, when you're married and have kids, of course you love being
I'm going
yourself.
To the Troubadour tonight to see. I've always wanted to go to the Troubadour to see a concert. You know, I know.
That's so cool.
Because I love
you're doing
music.
This alone too?
Doing that alone.
God, you're a loser.
And I'm doing your podcast.
Alone.
The Sklar's podcast.
That's great.
I have friends here
Tell
that I'm supposed
Sklar's
to meet
I
up
said
with.
Hi.
Comics never want to do shit. If I'm like, you want to come to the Troubadour? Call it.
I can tell you why. And then we'll end on this. I can tell you why. We are in front of people as a business. And it is exhausting looking out in an audience, then meeting the people afterwards like I do. I do meet and greets. I just want to be alone. And that's why relationships are tough, because you're competing with my couch. You all, if you're a woman, all you have to be is more interesting than my couch. And good luck with that. Good luck with that. Episode 79. Is it 79? What's wrong with the Winnie Adams? This is Harlan Williams singing this. Yeah, you should do his podcast too. Do you know Harlan?
Yeah, hook me up with. I mean, I'll do as many as I can.
Harlan's
this
amazing.
Week while I'm here. I love he's Harlan Williams. He's hilarious.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna contact him right after this.
All right.
And I'm gonna hook you up. I'm gonna show you how I help other people.
You're good.
I am. I want to thank Ernesto Hurtado for mastering this audio and getting it up there. We all know that the video is up on YouTube eventually. It's on Patreon first, patreon.com/Orny. And you can send letters and emails to whatswrong@ornyadams.com. I read all of them. I don't share them all on the air. You have to write, please share this, or you have my permission. But keep in touch. We'll see you online. Thank you, everyone who supports me. And please support Joe Matarese.
Should they know where to get this special?
No, this isn't about you, Joe. What do you think this is? This is my podcast.
Sorry, man.
Okay, Joe, go ahead. Let's hear it.
Well, it'll be on Joe. Well, my website is joematarese.com, and all my social media is at the Joe Matarese, MATARESE. And I have a feeling that special will be on YouTube. Within the next 3 months, look for Mullets and Mixtapes. It's on my YouTube page, Joe Matarese. I'm
sure you know I stopped recording about
30
seconds ago. Yeah.
What? Did you?
Screw your plugs.
No. How are they going to find
you? No, I didn't.
You did it?
No.
I thought you did.
I love you, man. I'm so glad you contacted me and wanted to come on the show.
I'm glad. This is fun.
Yeah.